Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Also, happy to tell you that we're brought to you today by ZipRecruiter. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial, and you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter. And that way, you don't have to go hunting and posting on all sorts of different sites. They'll do it for you. More about ZipRecruiter later in the program. Jim, we start with justice for an elected Democrat. So mark this day down on the calendar. We've talked before about the conviction of Kathleen Kane, the former attorney general for Pennsylvania. In fact, when she was actually convicted, she still hadn't resigned yet. She finally did that after that happened. Yesterday, Monday, was sentencing day in Pennsylvania. Here's WTAE Television explaining what happened.
Kathleen Kane in handcuffs. At one time, she was the top law enforcer in the state, going to jail now in shame. The former attorney general sentenced 10 to 23 months in the Montgomery County Jail. Kane was convicted of lying under oath about leaking secret grand jury evidence to embarrass a political rival. She could have been given as little as probation. And today, Kane begged the judge for mercy, saying she needs to be home to take care of her children. But the judge told Kane she is the one to blame and called Kane's perjury the ultimate assault on the legal system.
There are actually people from Kane's office who testified in the sentencing phase that she needed to face jail time because of how she ran the office in addition to this particular case. So, Jim, obviously we feel for her children. They didn't do anything wrong, but justice needed to be done here. And given all the Democrats we've seen who have somehow escaped justice in recent times, including the Democratic presidential nominee, it's good to know that it does apply to some Democrats.
Yeah, you almost want to give some points for shamelessness in that last-minute defense, Greg, because you can't jail me, I'm a parent. Is that part of the legal code there? Because if so, man, you and I can hit the town and rob some banks and paint the town red and maybe we go on, you know, become infamous outlaws or something. Hey, you can't jail us. We got kids. Now, a couple of people pointed out that, like, look, this is not just, I mean, perjury is very bad. But what's more is, look, she's the chief law enforcement officer in the state, right? I mean, this is not just lying. This is a matter of basically abuse of power. And on her way out, when it became very clear that she was in deep legal trouble, she started leaking emails left and right as if she was Pennsylvania's own personal WikiLeaks. basically, anything she had to embarrass anybody she'd ever worked with, she started putting that out there. If she was going to go down, she would take down as many people with her as possible. This is the kind of craven, nasty vindictiveness that people don't like seeing in our political system that I think keeps good people out of it. Bill Clinton endorsed her and said she was the future of the state and all that kind of stuff. So, oh, by the way, hey, Greg, I bet you can guess what word was missing from the Daily Beast write-up on the Kane conviction and sentencing.
Did it start with a capital D?
It did, and it ended with Democrat. yeah, but it just didn't seem relevant at that point. And, you know, those of us on the right cynically suspect that if she had been a Republican, this would be huge national news. And it's not like the media has ignored this story. It's just that there's no lessons to be taken from it. She just happened to be a bad egg, a bad apple. What are you going to do? You know, sometimes these things happen. Whereas other scandals reflect entirely on the party and reflect deep-seated, you know, Republican tendencies to abuse power and things like that. So on the one hand, it's good to see her behind bars. It's good to see she didn't just get let off with a slap on the wrist. But all things considered, the idea this is going to be downplayed is a little frustrating. And obviously, she's a woman who never should have been anywhere near the levers of power.
That's certainly the case. And as you mentioned, Bill Clinton and others saw her as a rising star in the Democratic Party. And a couple of years ago, a lot of people thought it would be her and not Katie McGinty running against Pat Toomey. And so somewhere Pat Toomey right now is saying, why didn't this news break a year later?
Sometimes justice works fast. Too fast.
All right. On to the bad martini now. And Jim, it was just earlier today, I was looking at the Real Clear Politics Senate polling and noticing that Kelly Ayotte is up 4 in the Amherst UMass WBZ poll in New Hampshire. Richard Burr is up 6 in the Monmouth poll in North Carolina. And even PPP has him up 1. But right now, the Cook Political Report, who's usually pretty unbiased in these things, suggests that the Democrats are in position to win the Senate majority. This is courtesy of Jennifer Duffy. Senate Republicans had been doing a pretty solid job of maintaining their distance from GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump by running their own campaign that focused largely on more local issues or those issues that motivate their base. The strategy was working fine, and it looked as if Republicans would be able to keep their losses low. That is until October 7th when the Washington Post reported on the existence of the Access Hollywood tape in which Trump described sexually assaulting women. Then things started to unravel, albeit slowly. And they say that states in particular like Florida, North Carolina, New Hampshire, Nevada, and Pennsylvania very much look to be trending towards the Democrats, although we've certainly seen some numbers that suggest otherwise in some of those states. They say, in fact, of the Senate seats in the toss-up column, Trump only leads in Indiana and Missouri, where both Republicans are actually running a few points behind him. So, Jim, I don't think we're ready to hand the gavel over to Chuck Schumer exactly just yet, but apparently the top of the ticket is becoming more of a drag than we were hoping.
Yeah, there was a couple of weeks ago where you and I would have looked at it and said, okay, it's not great, but I think we're going to get through this all right. And that does not appear to be the case now. You know, you get enough contradictory information. The poll showing Kelly Ayotte up is reassuring. New poll out from the New York Times, Siena, that has Senator Richard Burr down one to Ross. A couple came out yesterday. One had him up ahead by one, another had him up by six. You know, look, you'd like to be an incumbent, you'd like to be close to 50. And he is currently getting somewhere in the mid-40s in most of these polls. You know, you wouldn't say he's a done deal or that he's not going to win, but you also have to worry about him a little bit. I can't help but notice, you know, Rubio, who really has not trailed, is only up by two in the last CBS News YouGov poll. I'm not really that worried about him, but I just kind of noticed there was a point where Rubio seemed to be enjoying a pretty consistently large lead. So you kind of wonder if there's kind of been this just across the board, dispiriting amongst Republicans. Republicans not as enthusiastic as they were a few weeks ago, really feeling nauseated by the allegations against Trump, or just kind of getting sick of this election season. Evan Bayh in Indiana, I keep hearing from people that he's in trouble. I keep hearing from people the Republicans have got momentum on this. A poll came out Friday, had him up six. You know, this is not by any chance a sign that Republicans are not going to win the Senate or keep control of the Senate, but it seems to be getting tougher. Republicans are not where they want to be. There's still, you know, 2 weeks before Election Day roughly, but you know, I think I saw, it was yesterday, like 6 million votes have already been cast, Greg. As Yogi Berra used to say, it gets late early out there.
It does. Jim, there's some speculation out there that as the presidential race looks less and less likely for Republicans, that some of these senators, because of they feel this undertow, might start going out there and simply presenting themselves as the counterbalance to a potential Hillary Clinton presidency. Smart, or does that look like you're kicking your nominee in the shins and Republicans aren't going to appreciate that?
I don't see too much risk and harm to it, other than the idea if they do this too openly, Trump will start denouncing them the way he did against Paul Ryan earlier. You know, if you feel like the nominee is going to go down in flames, then maybe being attacked by him isn't the worst thing in the world. On the other hand, you want to win both the ticket splitters, you know, the Republicans who can't bring themselves to vote for Trump, and you want to win the Trump voters. I think that, you know, obviously nominating Trump complicated a lot of things for a lot of Republicans this year. I think at some point, as the more the polling becomes clear, as we get closer to Election Day, there'll be some point where they can level to, you know, say to the voters, all right, look, Hillary's going to be president. Do you want her president with a Democratic Senate in Congress, or do you want with a Republican Senate? And there to check her worst instincts and her worst excesses. And maybe that will work. You know, there's been some voters say people argue that the amount of voters who want to see divided government is overstated. But a bunch of these races look like they're going to come down to the wire, and every percentage point is going to count. So they may not have too much of a choice than to make that their closing message in the next week or so.
And the Cook Political Report analysis also points out that usually when you have this handful of toss-up races, a pretty significant percentage end up going one way. It's very rarely split 50-50. It's usually about two-thirds to one-third going towards one party. And we've certainly seen that in good Republican years as well, including 2014. So anyway, 2 weeks from today, the American people, that would be you. You're hiring. You're hiring people to be your president. You're hiring people to serve you in Congress, at the state, local level, all across the different levels of government. But are you also hiring on the business side? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can.
With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to more than 100 job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with just a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. You can quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. And Jim, speaking of voting, one of the things that in an otherwise splendid performance by Chris Wallace, and I'm guessing this was scripted for him at the third and final debate, was when he said, "Now it's your turn. We want everyone to get out there and vote." And yes, if you're informed on the issues, regardless of your perspective, we want you to vote. If you're conservative, we really, really want you to vote. But there's always the completely uninformed people who show up. And quite frankly, I'm not always thrilled that they show up because they don't know what they're talking about usually. But there's always this push to get people out to vote. And now there's a particularly crude PSA out by this group I've never heard of before called Civic Innovation Works. And it's a TV ad, but the dialogue will pretty much tell you the story here. Basically, a kid walks up to school and sees his friends with the voting stickers that their parents apparently gave them. And here's how that conversation outside the school goes.
My dad didn't vote.
Why not?
He goes to the gym every Tuesday before work.
Couldn't he vote after work?
Tuesday is a big TV night.
Your dad sounds like a total nihilist.
And a doofus.
What about our system of checks and balances?
Your dad probably hates bald eagles.
Wait! That's the guy! No!
What's all that about?
Just drive.
No! No! And so then the tagline is, "Be a role model, not an embarrassment." So, Jim, apparently schoolyard bullying is okay when it comes to voting.
Yeah. I notice nobody on the schoolyard cares who voted. Right. So how did he go on Proposition 2, by the way, or anything like that? You know, or how about those local officials you don't follow as much? You know, if you leave anything blank, you're a terrible child, and you know, social services will be knocking at your door. This is a horrible message. You and I have talked about it in the past. It's perfectly fine to not vote. And in fact, if you don't know who the candidates are, if you don't know the issues, if you don't know what is at stake, it's irresponsible to vote. I remember describing back when I lived in Washington, D.C., voting for, I don't know, school board or one of the positions, and realizing I was about to vote for someone based on the fact that I'd seen one of their signs in the neighborhood. And that's it. Now, it could have been, you know, John Jones is an axe murderer or something. You know, I knew nothing about it, but I recognize that name. And I make fun of voters who vote for candidates on name recognition. So if I do it, how much better am I? So I decided, okay, before the election, I'm going to read up on local candidates. I'm going to read up on the local initiatives. I'm not just going to worry about the presidential race or Senate races, the big heavily covered ones. I'm going to pay attention to this stuff. And in the years that I don't, if there's something there, I'm going to leave it blank, and it's perfectly fine. At times, it can even be very strategic to not vote. I know that back when I lived in Alexandria, Virginia, they had, I want to say something like 6 positions on city council. The local Republican Party, which had basically been dormant like a frozen caveman for many generations, actually found 2 candidates to run, and they told people, look, vote for our 2 candidates and nobody else. You don't have to, because you know any vote for any other one of the Democratic candidates, and I believe there were like 8,000 Democratic candidates for city council, that basically the easiest way to make sure that those 2 Republicans got seats on the city council was to vote for the 2 Republicans and vote for nobody else. And that was what I did, and that's what a lot of Republicans did. And lo and behold, and you know, there were some Democrats who were claiming it's illegal. No, it's not. As we all know, for Democrats, the definition of illegal is kind of a synonym for "I don't like that," or "that might not help me win, so you shouldn't be allowed to do that." But yeah, so this PSA, besides the invoking children, which is emotionally manipulative and just, you know, completely uncalled for this situation. You know, like, look, if you need a PSA to get you to vote, maybe you shouldn't vote. Maybe you don't care that much. If the only reason you're voting is you don't want your kid to get made fun of, you know what? Then show up online, fill out a blank ballot. Sign it, submit it, okay? Still counts just like everybody else. You'll go into the registrar as having voted. So, yeah, this is, you know, I remember once thinking, ah, you know, we gotta encourage people to vote. No, we don't. You know, we don't need a more activist America, Greg. We need an inactivist America. Let's salute all the couch potatoes who have never voted for a bad idea. Think about all the terrible concepts that have never gotten up off the ground because their butts won't get up off the couch. I myself salute you, couch potatoes of America, for all the times your inactivism has killed bad ideas before they could even get started.
Very good. I'd also like to salute the group Civic Innovation Works, who put on this horrific PSA for clearly hiring a writer who knows nothing about kids. Because if public school kids actually knew the word nihilist or familiar with our system of checks and balances, we'd probably be in a better position right now.
You know, here's the thing. If your kid's in the gifted program, yeah, maybe that scenario will come out.
Oh, man. Yeah. Horrible, horrible. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And a reminder that our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. They'll put the job on all the different sites. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.